What did you think of 101?
I liked it all better the second time I watched it, particularly now after having seen parts of season two. Why it wasn't more popular last year, and I don't know why I didn't like it as much last year. I think this year is really playing off of all the character development from last year. And
I think, you know, if you know somebody else likes it and they want to talk about it with you too, it's more interesting than if you're just looking at something by yourself.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So this is the West Coast Project podcast for Halt and Catch Fire. And this is our recap of season one. My name is Mike.
And I'm Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, we're catching back up, even the middle of our season of Halt and Catch Fire, with season one. So we'll sprinkle these in between our other podcast episodes. But sure. I think it's cool to talk about those old shows, because they were still interesting, and they're actually pretty interesting to talk about. Even still, even now, later. Maybe even more interesting.
I think so. I mean, it is for me.
So we get in 101 is I.O. and put out, but I/O. And then they show on the green screen the description of what the meaning of Halt and Catch Fire is.
Right.
It's pretty cool. Did you ever check that out?
Yeah, I think we actually even talked about it last time, something about where it kind of makes the computer stop what it's doing, and all the processes run at the same time trying to compete with each other, and so you can't stop it, and it won't shut, you know, it just kind of dies.
Yeah, it reaches an irresolvable state where it tries to do something that it can never end up doing, right. So everything shuts down. It's pretty cool how they use these computer coding terms in the show and in the titles.
Right.
I like that. This week on 206, it's like the description of the broadband cable.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Pretty cool, but that's for another podcast. So we get the character intros in 101. Joe McMillan comes driving into town, and he hits the armadillo.
Yeah.
Makes it into roadkill. Pretty interesting way to introduce a character.
Yeah, and it's pretty fitting from everything that we know about Joe now. It's particularly looking back on that, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, you know right away it's Texas. You know right away he's like somewhat affluent, somewhat at least appears to be affluent, successful. You know, he's no slouch. He's driving into town with purpose, and he's driven. You know, he's literally driven to get into town quickly and purposefully and all that. So it sets a pretty good tone.
Right.
And he's going on his way to do a college lecture. And by the way, let's just quickly talk about this, Michelle. We're not going to do scene by scene. I'm just going to overview the quickly what happens in these episodes. Just maybe short little thing. So he does a college lecture, and he meets Cameron.
Yeah, he's pretty impressed with her, too.
You know, he's recruiting. I think he's doing that to recruit, because he's really not with IBM anymore at that point.
Is he not? I wasn't for sure if he was. No, you're right. He's not, because it's been a year. You're right.
So we know in hindsight now he's got this plan. His plan is to find Gordon and re-engineer the chip, and then he's going to need an outside person. So he's on a recruiting mission here at this college.
Right.
We see Gordon getting bailed out of jail. That's a little bit of a preview of his lifestyle.
Right.
And
right. It shows Gordon as he is in the whole episode. It really sets him up. Joe is the one blazing into town with little regard for anything, wildlife or whatever, anything. We see Cameron, who is uppity and thinks she knows it all, but a visionary, but almost dangerous in her lack of self-control, regard. I don't know. I mean, they're having sex within 4 minutes of episode one. And then we meet Gordon, who's this kind of apathetic, pathetic character who's an alcoholic, or at least has an alcohol problem, and little regard for his family, and he's meek at his job. And it just really set up the whole thing of how Joe, I think, draws out the good and the bad in the rest of the characters, including himself.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think those characters are the way they are, with or without Joe ever showing up.
Well, of course they are, but he brings it out in them. You can see Gordon come alive when Joe's speaking. You can see the motivational talks that Joe gives really resonating with Gordon and who Gordon used to be, or maybe who he aspires to be.
So we learned a little bit more about Joe too, in that he doesn't even bring an interview to this job. He doesn't even bring a resume to this interview with Bosworth. He just brings a W-2.
Yeah.
Here's what I can do for you. Here's the bottom line. Hire me. He's just very assumptive.
Right.
He steals parking spaces right out of Gordon's, right from under his nose.
I think he did that to get Gordon's attention.
Oh,
though.
Of course, obviously. Yeah. So we know it's 1983. We see Return of the Jedi was the big. We see some social cues here, the popularity of popular culture, Return of the Jedi. We know that Donna and Gordon had started a company and had failed at a trade show where the computer actually failed at the trade show.
Yeah.
The worst way to fail. We learn a little bit more about Joe's dad and that he has his bat that his dad gave him and told him to always swing for the fences.
Yeah, I don't believe anything Joe says, by the way.
Because that's true.
We find out so many times that some of his little motivational stories and stuff like that he's told are lies. They're just ways to set people up.
Yeah, but he also tells the truth. He also has some times where he tells the truth. He also has
How do you know?
He tells the truth sometimes.
Okay. You'll honestly have to point it out because I can't tell. As a matter of fact, I had noted much later on, I'm like, he finally tells the truth. And then I kind of question myself, but I'm like, but how do I actually know that's true? Because who's to say? It's kind of situational with him.
When the show started and they did the hack of the BIOS chip, did the way they did it help you understand what they were doing?
Honestly, that stuff's above my head. It was neat to see it, but it's beyond my knowledge on stuff like that.
Well, of course, but they gave a little lesson for the audience to show kind of what they were doing. It was cool.
I think the whole thing is like that, though, don't you? I mean, the whole thing is like lesson after lesson of how this came about. And part of the thing that's so interesting about this show now to me is that this is like historical fiction of the birth of computer technology. And I think this is going to be really, really relevant on down the line. I mean, you know, you and I live through this, but I think on down the line, this stuff's going to be, it's important. It's important
how it started. It already is relevant. That's why I like it. They talk about how we got to where we are with computer technology and social and networking and mixed in with some really good fiction that makes the characters totally interesting.
Well, see, even things like with my daughters, though. I mean, I've got an older daughter who remembers a time home computer. I mean, pre the time we had a home computer. I know there was home computers before that. But then I've got a younger daughter who doesn't remember that time. And so it's really the age of change. And
she remembers when she doesn't remember when there was no computer?
Yeah, my youngest daughter does not remember a time when we didn't have a home computer.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's significant. There's like 10 years difference in the ages of my oldest and my youngest. And that was like, of course, in our house, the season of change for just knowledge. I frequently talk to them about stuff because they're always... Knowledge is so easy for them now. Anything they want to know, they literally can pull it up on their phone in 15 seconds. And they really don't appreciate the pre-Google days of having to do stuff and learn stuff. And we were talking about when I was a child, if you wanted to know something, even something as simple as the lyrics of a song, it was like you waited for it to come on the radio or you went and bought the record. Or the 8-track. I'm really dating myself here. But it's true. And it's so different now. And it's thanks to this and the hard work of people like this. And I realize these are just characters, but that's what makes it so fascinating to me. And I'm really glad we're doing this again because of that.
So we also see that Donna catches them working on this computer. And she is really not fond of that because she's done with computers at this point. The Symphonic failed. Now she has a family. She wants security. She's making her $15,000 a year at Texas Instruments. She just wants to kind of move on from the entrepreneur mode.
Well, and Gordon lied to her. He told her he was sick, or told his work he was sick. Well, yeah, he told her too. He lied about what he was doing, and it's just another thing about him and their relationship. She's really open to everything, but you have to remember too that he borrowed all this money to do this Symphonic computer from her dad.
Yeah.
And so she feels kind of beholden
to
that.
But that's why he lied, because he knew she would not be receptive to it. You know, I agree later on. She's a superstar, man, for her wife. She's awesome. She's like, if you want to do this, let's make a deal. I'm in, but you got to be in on the family side. That's so cool of a partnership, of a way that they can communicate like that.
Yeah.
I forget which episode that's in, but it's like maybe two or three, but that was pretty cool. And then we see the lawyers. The lawyers are all part of Joe's plan that they can't. The Cardiff company can't nix this whole thing now because the lawyers are involved. And Nathan's really mad. Nathan Cardiff, the owner, is really mad about all this kind of getting used by Joe. But we learned another thing about Joe in that when Nathan's mad at him, Joe just kind of sits there calmly and then leans in towards him like, listen, this is why I'm doing this. He's not afraid of anything.
Yeah. No.
I really like that about Joe.
We also meet Boz, who becomes pretty important in the whole thing. And he really got the raw end of the deal, I think, in most of this thing. But
so far, I mean, he's due for some reward, maybe in season two or if there's a season three. Maybe. And then we see Gordon has meaning now. Joe has given meaning to his life. Gordon is using alcohol and later on drugs, but now he's like, this is his drug. This invention, working technical stuff, is his drug.
Yep.
And he has meaning. That's about it for episode one, and unless you have any other quick comments about it or anything else you might remember about it.
Nope. That's about it.
It left me wondering. I mean, it was a kind of a cool cliffhanger that they had the lawyers all in there, like, oh my God, what's going to happen to them?
Well, right, and they went out to hire Cameron, too, because, you know, like you said, Joe was recruiting her. And so they went out to hire her and got her as part of Cardiff as well.
Yeah. I don't think anything that happened to Joe on his way to Gordon and Cardiff was an accident. It was all planned out by him.
Do you think that Cameron coming there, do you think their intent was to fire her after 5 weeks like they discussed or not?
Yes.
Okay.
Their intent was to use her to the point where all the legal processes worked the way that Joe needed them to work.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if that was just something said to appease Gordon or not. Because Gordon, of course, for whatever reason, didn't like her there.
Right. Well, and Joe, even when he's screwing her, he's like, he's not.
It doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't seem to mean that much to him at first, anyway. Maybe later on, but. Yeah, he even says that much to Cameron, unless that's part of his MO, just to, I don't need you, so that makes him appealing to her. But whatever, that's it for 101, and you can catch us on westcoastproject.com for Halt and Catch Fire. We're actually doing season two. We've got the current episodes up there, too. And we'll recap these first season ones really quickly and get through them and post them in between the other podcast for the current ones. So, Michelle, how do people reach you on the internet?
On Twitter, at Michelle from TN.
And I'm at Scathing Tweets on Twitter. And so until 102, we will see you next time.
See you next time.